The Grizzly Berry Cafe podcast is brought to you by our pals over at Gazelle.com. When you've got used consumer electronics that you need to convert into cold, hard, or soft, lukewarm cash, don't sell them, kids. Gazelle them. The Grizzly Berry Cafe is also brought to you by Cobra Eye Radar, a sleek and compact detection unit that provides you with state-of-the-art radar and laser detection technology. Find out more at Cobra.com.
The Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe is brought to you this week by The Handy Holder, the most comfortable and secure way to hold and view your iPad or other tablet devices, providing full 360-degree rotation to meet all users' unique viewing needs. Check them out at handyholder.com.
Hi, Mike.
Is this the start of the show?
God, it's a beautiful fall day, isn't it? It's perfect. It's not raining down where you are, is it?
I've been sequestered in the basement for the last 29 hours.
Oh, you got to get out of the house. It is beautiful out. There's not like a cloud in the sky. The fodder is in the shock. The hay is in the barn. What was that from?
But is the frost on the pumpkin? From some poem we had to memorize, like in 10th grade English class. That's what that's from. That's the only reason I even know that expression, when the fodder is in the shock.
Now, what does that mean? A shock is a barn, right? And a fodder is like stalks of hay, stalks of wheat or something?
And I thought the fodder, you know, the food or whatever, I thought the shock was like the thing that bound it together.
Oh, yeah.
But I could be wrong. It's been many, many moons since I've even thought about that. But yeah, that couplet... when the frost is on the pumpkin and the fodder is in the shock is like ingrained in my memory, probably more than anything else I did in 10th grade.
Did you get English. Oh yeah, absolutely. I can't remember anything else from 10th grade English. Although the other day
I can. That's where I first read A Separate Piece.
Oh yeah. I do remember reading a lot of Edgar Allan Poe. That I should say that we read a lot of Poe in that class, didn't we?
Not 10th grade. At least I didn't.
It was ninth grade, but yeah. It was...
If you're new to the program, by the way, Clayton and I are a year apart. Apart from having grown up together, right. I am 9 months older than Clayton.
Yeah, the Edgar Allan Poe stuff was good. Mm-hmm. And right now, enjoying myself a little apple cider, which is, you know, those little side-of-the-road places you pop off and grab some? We stop.
Sure,
and got
right.
Some.
That's where rapists wait.
Right. Yeah, they don't take credit card, too, these rapists. So you can stop off and get some corn, some homemade pies, but they don't take credit card.
Right.
You got to have cash on you. You got to have cash if you want to get raped.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's logical. I got, over the weekend, I was on the road quite a bit, and I had a cup of hot apple cider served to me by the people at Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh,
and their apple cider was quite good. In fact... I don't mind telling you. Not only is it like a third the price of Starbucks,
yeah,
but it tastes way better.
Yeah, did you try? Well, you don't like the pumpkin stuff.
No, I don't.
I got a pumpkin coffee there yesterday.
At Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
I heard negative reviews, though, of their pumpkin drinks.
No. But didn't you hear 2 weeks ago on this show? I don't know if you were listening.
Yeah.
When I was talking about our road trip to the Renaissance Fair, I popped in and I got a pumpkin spice iced coffee. Now, that was delicious, but this pumpkin coffee, this hot one, was not terribly good. Mm-hmm. Nothing comes close to the pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks, I will say.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. And I want to further elaborate upon that. As there were several other coffee drinkers on the road with me this weekend, there were universal thumbs downs from the Chikara crew about the pumpkin offerings from Dunkin' Donuts.
Really?
Yes.
I do like those apple cider donuts. Did you ever drive from... Oh my gosh, they're amazing. When we would drive to like the Jersey Shore from Pennsylvania...
Mm, the one in New Jersey.
Right, the Jersey Shore in New Jersey.
Yeah.
We would drive from Pennsylvania to that one, not to be confused with the one that's just south of Gettysburg.
Mm.
And there'd be those little pull-off-the-road places, and you could get hot apple cider donuts that had that sugar on top.
Mm.
I don't know that there's a better dessert treat anywhere. Have you ever tasted one of these?
No.
Hot apple cider donuts?
No, Haribo pie. Uncle Kevin, I want the Haribo pie. I want the Haribo pie.
Although, what did I have? Oh, last night. I don't know. You've probably seen this advertised as you are in Philadelphia.
Haribo pie.
The Phillies Turkey Hill Graham Slam ice cream. Have you heard of this?
I think, actually, this has existed before, right? Because they have a couple local sports team tie-in ice creams, right? But it's right. Seasonal.
This one isn't, as far as I know, seasonal. Or maybe it's just baseball seasonal. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they've had it for a number of years. Because I've seen it at the ballpark for a number of years. Turkey Hill, for those of you who don't know, I don't know if it's just in Pennsylvania. It may be Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and that sort of lower quadrant. They make fantastic ice cream. I think they make drinks as well. Like you get Turkey Hill iced tea, Turkey Hill lemonade. And they have like those little Turkey Hill quick stops too, like gas station. They make this Philly's Graham Slam ice cream that I've always seen and I thought, oh, this is going to be gimmicky, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to be any good. So I've never tasted it. Well, last night while I was doing Twit with Leo Laporte, my wife ran to the market, had to get some things. She came back. And after the show, we were sitting downstairs watching a Phillies game, actually, and flipping between that and the Eagles game. And she said, hey, I got you a little surprise. She went to the freezer and pulled this out. And it was the Phillies Graham Slam ice cream. And I said, oh, I've never tried this. I'm curious how it tastes. It may be the best ice cream I've ever had. Graham cracker that's crumbled inside of it with like a, I don't know, it's like a hint of honey on top. I don't know what it is. Little chunks of chocolate. That I don't know if there's like a caramel inside the chocolate little nougats that are found in this thing, but it was delicious.
Tell me more, the guy who feels guilty about the calorie count of a cinnamon dolce latte. Tell me more about this ice cream experience of yours. And let me just, as an addendum, say, I hope that the geniuses from Borders Books get their hands on the recipe.
You know, Borders is out of business, man. The main one of the marquee ones, right in New York City's Penn Station, right next door to it, right by Madison Square Garden. I think it's actually attached to Madison Square Garden. They're going out of business sale, 10, 30, 40, 50% off all their books, fire sale. They were even giving away those displays. Like if you wanted to come in and buy like a book display, which I got to think that's a stupid idea, right? Because they've put out of business all these like little mom and pop shops. So who would buy like a book display, like another Borders?
Well, they're making a comeback. All the mom and pops will rise again.
Right. So anyway, that board, Borders is gone. That flagship one then said, well, hey, we only have 10 days left. Come in and get it. And people were selling their displays. You could come in and grab lighting fixtures. You could grab, I thought to tell you about it. I don't know if you could ever use something for a Chikara show or not. But then there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal about how ridiculously overpriced those items were. Like if you were going to go into business for yourself and you thought that this was a good deal, which was to go down to the local Borders fire sale and get some of these display cases, you could actually do better by just getting them through a wholesaler for cheaper than you could get it for like 30% off from Borders. Trying to liquidate it all. But yeah, try. Moral of this story is that Borders is going out of sale, and try Philly's Graham Slam ice cream. It'll change your life.
It'll change your life. That's a bold statement.
Yeah, I got something that might change your life. I was reading the Wall Street Journal this morning, and
good God, the boring crap you do. Go ahead.
I was on Twit. I read the Wall Street Journal.
What did you do this morning?
What did I do? I only just woke up in time for the podcast.
You went to the post office again?
I did. Yeah, I did. I woke up, went to the post office, came back to do the podcast,
and then went to sleep.
Which will be the balance of today's program? Will be me snoring softly in the background.
But I couldn't help but thinking about you when I was reading this article today.
Oh, shucks.
See, that's the sweet love I bring to you. You worked for a McDonald's growing up.
Indeed I did.
As did I. Now, I recall the McDonald's that you worked for was franchised by this guy who, I think he owned like two of them, didn't he?
Yeah, he went on to acquire more and more of them, and then I think he eventually got out. But he sort of became, I'll tell you this, there's a handful of not common but not uncommon words either that I'm not really sure that I use them correctly, so I always abstain. And I'm going to throw one out right now, and you'll tell me.
Commie?
I'm going to refer to Bob, the guy we knew who bought up these McDonald's, as a local fast food impresario.
Impresario.
Am I using that correctly? I really don't know. I don't know when it's appropriate to use impresario.
Well, what is the... Is there a shortened version of that word, empress?
Well, it's I. It's I-M-P-R-E-A-S-I-O.
Impresario. I don't know, to be honest with you, I don't know how that word would be properly used. It sounds right, right?
Right. Like, maybe if you, that, you know.
Like, if you even said maestro, I'd say, that sounds about right.
Anything that ends in an O.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's Italian he's using. I don't know what that is.
I can't figure that out. But impresario, I would probably just use the term entrepreneur.
Right. Like, right? That's what I'm saying to you. Like, I avoid using impresario because I'm not entirely certain I'm using it right. I found the definition here online. So,
yeah.
Any person who organizes or manages public entertainment, or any manager or director. So, yeah, in a sense. But I think it's meant, I think the connotation is generally it has something to do with the entertainment industry, even though there are alternate definitions.
So, if he was like, you would describe Barnum and Bailey,
mm-hmm.
right? Or Don King. As an impresario, right?
Right. That's a very good example, sure. Or do you know, by the way, the name of the guy? It escapes me at the moment. Who they say invented NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys. He was their manager.
Oh, Lou Pearlman?
Thank you. I watched a documentary about Lou Pearlman on CNBC a week or two ago, which is almost as boring as Clayton reading the Wall Street Journal. What a fascinating con man that fat freak turned out to be.
Oh, he is. You know, he reminds me of the Penguin.
Yes, he's very... He's like, oh, God, who's the, what's that actor? He's actually been rumored to have been playing the Penguin, but of course that never turned out to be true. He played Truman Capote. He was the villain in the Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Thank you, and he's an excellent actor.
He is.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's what Lou Pearlman reminds me of.
Yeah.
Like, Lex Luthor crossed with a Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's what he... And are you kind of up on him? Like,
oh, yeah.
He
I've
scammed
him.
People for... Really? The guy's incredible thief. An incredible thief.
I've met him a couple of times. And, you know, it's a really small world. I mean, when I worked at the Daily Buzz in Orlando, Florida...
Right. I was in the Backstreet Boys. You were interviewing Lou Pearlman.
I was in NSYNC.
Mm-hmm.
And he took us for all we had. And then he cleaned house. He got rid of all of us.
Yeah.
And he brought in a whole batch of new guys.
Those robots.
Right. He brought in a guy, Justin Thumber?
I've heard of him.
Something. He brought him in. No talent compared to what we were able to proffer.
Of course.
I met him. I was doing the Daily Buzz. We had him on. We had a couple of the, you know, of course, he's tied to the, what's it, the New Kids on the Block guys. I co-hosted an episode of a couple of shows, The Daily Buzz, with Jordan Knight.
Mm.
And so I've sort of have this friendship with Jordan Knight, if you can believe it. He's been on our show a couple of times. He's been on Fox a couple of times.
I've known you my whole life. You've never mentioned this before today.
It's embarrassing. I didn't want to mention it to you. I thought you wouldn't want to talk to me anymore.
The podcast would go down the drain. He just hung up his microphone on me. What are we going to do?
It's not enough that I read the Wall Street Journal, which would turn you off.
I know.
I'll redeem myself by telling you a little bit later in the show. I read a whole slew of comics, and I'll tell you a little bit about those. But no,
I was at my Starbucks with the Wall Street Journal, and I had a long cigarette holder.
Okay. Okay. So anyway, I met him. He was there sort of in the background at one point during one of the shows. There was like a new up-and-coming boy band who we had on the show back a few years ago, and he was sort of overseeing this new band called Natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And my friend Michelle, who I lived in the same apartment complex with out in Los Angeles, her brother was in this band called Natural from Boston. The thing is, though, they're not like NSYNC. Like they don't just sing. They actually played instruments, and they were a boy band. He would tour all over the world. So Lou Pearlman was responsible for that group as well. New Kids on the Block, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, the whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So your impression is that he was a thief?
Yes, he's going to be in jail for quite a while, or prison, for everything that he's done.
Really, I didn't know that. What did he do?
Yeah. He ran Here's something else I'm a little hesitant to invoke. I'm not exactly sure what a Ponzi scheme is.
Okay.
In the description of the documentary that I was watching, it said Lou Pearlman, who ran one of the biggest Ponzi schemes in the history of you know, American finance or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, I think, like, and I watched two of these back-to-back, so I hope I'm not getting my facts confused. I think, like, in 1 year, he scammed $200 million out of people.
And also created Disney World. You might have gotten your documentaries mixed up when you were watching them.
That's right. So Lou Pearlman, who invented Disney World and was a Nazi sympathizer, stole $2 million from boy bands like Clayton's friend's brother.
Now, what was the deal? It was set up sort of like a Mike Tyson relationship with Don King as a promoter kind of a thing, where
he was their manager.
You knew they were going to get shortchanged, right?
Right. Like, he signed these guys when they were very young into, like, unfavorable contracts, you know, with, like, ridiculous things. I think they had, like, an interview maybe where they were showing, like, the Backstreet Boys are in sync or something, where they were saying they were being paid $400 a month when they had, like, the number one album. And they just came back off like a world tour, which had grossed billions of dollars, you know, or whatever ridiculous statistic it was.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, why are we only getting paid $400? But beyond that, like, for example, with some of the other Lou Pearlman stuff, this was definitely a Lou Pearlman story. I thought this was fascinating. Like, he just, like, invented a blimp company one day and sold advertising to, like, major sponsors like McDonald's and Coca-Cola. And he didn't even have a blimp. Like, he just lied to them. And, like, got millions of dollars. And then when he realized he had to do it, like, he went out and bought, like, a secondhand blimp, which, like, crashed 6 miles into its first flight or whatever. But he was an incredible con man. And he just stole and stole from people all over. And, yeah, it was really interesting. And it was kind of about how the feds caught him and everything else. And
To be clear, a Ponzi scheme. Now, a lot of this term had been thrown around quite extensively lately as a result of Bernie Madoff, who ran a Ponzi scheme.
No, I think that he played drums for Paul Simon.
Bernie Madoff?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, I think you have your facts confused. But there was a guy named Walt Disney who recently ran a Ponzi scheme in New York and took a bunch of Jews for millions of dollars.
That's right. It's actually based on the name of a guy, Charles Ponzi, from like the early 1900s. So he was the first guy to do this. Basically, you just put a lot of money into some investment from a guy. Let's say you were going to run your own Ponzi scheme. Which I think
please,
you should.
Yeah, keep going.
I'm going to walk you through this.
Please,
so you're going to
step
set up a Quackenbush Ponzi scheme portfolio, and I was going to invest some money to you. I would give you, you know, $100,000, and you would say, "I'm going to take that money and invest it," and you know, get dividends down the line. Your money is going to grow with me. Then I take your money, and I turn around and I maybe make some payouts to some other investors. Or I never actually do anything with your money, and I just give you some investment money back. Maybe I give you $10,000 back in different points. Basically, they're getting returns on their own investment from their own money, but there's no money actually growing anywhere.
Right.
So that's kind of how it works, and I don't know how that Bernie Madoff was able to, you know, continue it for so long, and basically. It's the system itself is destined to collapse because of the earnings.
You can never keep up with it.
Yeah, and there are usually no earnings. And if there are any, in the case with Bernie Madoff, he actually was getting some earnings, but they were never enough to you know, give back. They were always less than the payments to investors. And then meanwhile, most of the time, you're cleaning up, right? You're cleaning up on all this.
Well, you're just like living off this bankroll you've made for yourself.
Right.
From the investors. And this other documentary I watched, which was about this like nerdy freak guy who had like a harem of women that were all like obsessed with him, even though this guy was like the dirtiest, weirdest freak you've ever seen. It explained how he was doing a Ponzi scheme. He told people to invest with him, and then he would just go and live large off the money. And he would fabricate fake bank statements that made it look like their money was growing, but it was all just bogus, you know?
Right.
And at one point when he was, you know, as you said, these things are doomed to collapse, right? They implode. To stave it off longer, and this was, you know, fairly early on for him, he went on to be one of the largest scammers as well of all time. By the way, the series where I'm watching these is called American Greed. It is narrated by Stacey Keach, who you may know from Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. In any event, so what he did was, this guy who was a genius at scamming people, he needed more cash. He'd drained his supplies and thought, where am I going to come up with large sums of cash? And he thought that insurance companies have to maintain liquid reserves that are fairly large so that they're always ready to do payouts in the event of a claim or, you know, something like that. And he went around buying up, using what little money he had left, he bought up little insurance companies everywhere so he could keep using their cash reserves to, like, live on his compound with his harem of women and drive sports cars and stuff like this, and got away with it for, like, a ridiculous amount of time. Like, 8 to 10 years he lived like this because he just was really, really clever about how he would go about scamming people. And, you know, I think, like, we all, right, we all kind of dread that there's, like, someone out there that's trying to, like, con us or scam us in some way, other than you and I mean.
Right.
We'll be upfront about it. Like, we're coming to scam you. But I always think, like, you know, I should really watch these so I can be smarter, so that when this dude eventually, you know, when I'm the subject of one of these things and they're like, we were digging through your trash.
Right.
We saw you have $24 in savings. Do you want to invest with us? I can, you know, I think, well, that might be a little fishy.
It's true, though, right? It's always, you know, all these sort of get-rich-quick schemes. I mean, you and I have been down this pike before, of course.
Not that I know of.
I mean, I think you and I have purchased, or maybe it was you, have purchased just about every get-rich-quick scheme book, you know, when we were in college or post-college, right? Any of the Don LaPree books that we wanted to learn and study. What else? Some of those late-night infomercials, right?
Yeah,
buy and sell diamonds on the black market.
They're always trying to get me to carry their diamonds through customs. Like, what?
Did you see that photo, by the way, this week? I don't know if you caught it or not. Where this guy coming over from, I think he came from somewhere in South America, and they had X-rayed his stomach, and it was something like, "Did you ever want it?" Let me do a little search here for it. Did you ever wonder what 80 bags of cocaine in someone's stomach looks like?
Was this a large man?
I don't know if he was large or not. Here's the photo. In fact, I'll send it to you right now. This is classic. Do a little Google search, friends of the Grizz, or we'll tweet it out. All right, we're Grizzly Bear Egg. All right, sorry, we're just Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter. We'll tweet it out here. I'm going to send this over to you right now. 72 bags of cocaine in this guy's stomach as a bit of a pack mule, I guess. Is that what you call him, a pack mule?
A drug mule?
A drug mule.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't figure out this new Skype, mule. How to send you a file. This is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. That's why I never update. That's why I like Skype Zero. That's the one I
got this new laptop, and then I had to put this thing on there. So I'll send it to you by drug mule, so you can see this.
Do you need my address and a stamp? Just just mail it to me.
Did you hear about that cat this week?
Did I hear about the cat?
This cat went from here. I'm going to send this to you.
Are you? I've heard that one before.
This cat left home in Colorado 5 years ago, and they just found it in New York. The ASPCA, I guess, ran, you know, they have the little microchip in the neck. The cat's name was Willow. They found this cat. They scanned the chip in the neck, and they found out that it was from Colorado. The owners then were flying out to New York to get their cat back. They were so thrilled. They hadn't seen their cat in 5 years. I think we should get chips put in our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you?
I do. Ever since I saw that one Law & Order episode where Bob Saget was the villain, I thought that. That's the plot of that episode. He puts a tracker chip in somebody's shoulder.
See that message I just sent you?
I'm looking at the picture of the 72 bags of cocaine. It looks like a virus.
Right. It looks like one of those fake CSI virus computer animations, yeah. Right? Like they plays like a little Who music in the background. So this guy, he, in order to elude law enforcement, stuffed dozens of thumb-sized bags of cocaine. He swallowed them and wanted to see, basically, you can see how far the digestive tract has expanded. Looking at this photo, it's all the way up until it was like rib cage and all the way down to his pelvis. 20-year-old Irishman was arrested Monday at a Brazilian airport with 72 bags filled with nearly a kilo of cocaine in his intestines. See, he's an impresario.
Mm-hmm.
10 pounds. It was mostly 10 pounds. So anyway, my point about bringing up that Wall Street Journal piece was,
yes,
and the franchisee at McDonald's. You and I need to figure out how to franchise something. Listen to this, because lawmakers on Capitol Hill, like, in order to make some extra money, they're doing a lot of side jobs, right? Mm. 68 members of Congress have, like, side jobs. Mm-hmm. Some of them have real estate holdings, others have
investments. Congress works like 4 days a year, don't they? I mean, what are you going to do with your spare time? I'd be bored senseless if I was a congressman.
Why don't you do what Representative John Fleming from Louisiana did, which is he made $6.5 million last year from his side jobs, one of which he owns dozens of Subway restaurants, UPS store franchises. And in lieu of a salary, he takes profits from his company. So one Subway franchise that he owned produced more than $5 million in income last year.
Hmm.
We need to look into getting a Subway.
I'm going to talk to you about that in a moment. But first, we're going to stop this program right here in the middle. Well, slightly off the middle. And we're going to talk about our show sponsor, Cobra Eye Radar. You know why? Because they're awesome. Okay? That's the number one reason we talk about these people. Our friends over at Cobra Eye Radar have made the most advanced, the smartest detection system in the world. And you can go over and check them out. CobraEyeRadar.com is their home on the World Wide Webbies. You can download the free app. They got one for iPhone. They got one for Android. Because this latest invention of theirs, the iRadar system, couples through Bluetooth technology with your smartphone. And apart from the fact that it's a very sleek little device that they've come up with here, you can control all the settings. You get all of your alerts through your iPhone. It's got a dashboard right there that's completely customizable for you. And you're going to have really you're at the forefront of this type of technology. In terms of performance from this system, you're getting complete protection against all types of radar and laser guns being used in law enforcement, as well as red light cameras at intersections. All of that and a whole lot more, as a matter of fact, because thanks to the Aura driving hazard database, which gives the Cobra its fangs, as we like to say here on the Grizz, you're really at, and if you go over to their website, if you go over to CobraEyeRadar.com and you just see some of the industry awards that they've won, you'll have an understanding of why this is such a revolutionary thing, why these guys are always the industry leaders, because they're working tirelessly to make sure you're getting the very, very best for your investment. And something like the Cobra Eye Radar device, this is more about, you know, making sure you don't get a citation or a ticket or anything of that nature. It's really about making you a safer, more alert driver. And just the fact that their complete database gets verified and then re-verified twice a day to make sure everything you're hearing is up to date and accurate. And some of it is user inputted as well. You know, people will update them and let them know, hey, look, at this particular intersection, we're getting a false reading here. There really isn't something here. And the database becomes smarter. People who are driving on the same road, perhaps ahead of you, input something new that's just popped up. And then it's there for your benefit, too, because of the social aspect of the Aura driving hazard database. You can find out everything you'd ever want to know about the Cobra Eye Radar system by visiting CobraEyeRadar.com. Check out the 4-minute demo video that they have made over there. And you can download the free app any old time if you want. It's for Android, it's for iPhone, it's for Super Robot 2, and a whole lot of other things. Go check them out. We love Cobra Eye Radar.
And breaking news from Cobra.
Mm.
Have you heard about this? I hope you have. I hope you received your new Cobra device, because let me tell you about this. We're going to tell you more in the coming weeks here, especially as we head into October. But brand new, and you're getting a little sneak peek right now from Cobra. Oh, you like gadgets, and I know you do. Cobra has come out with their new tag. It's called the Cobra Tag. Mm. And it's a sensor you attach to your keys. You'll never lose your keys again. Mm. It looks like a little keychain. I mean, they didn't want to make it big and clunky and designed so you'd have this giant thing attached to your keys. No, it looks like your normal keychain. Mm-hmm. It says Cobra Tag on it. And it's a sensor. You can put it on your purse, your computer bag, or any other item you basically just want to protect from loss. So, not just your keys. And basically, the sensor communicates with the phone's free app that you download. You download the free Cobra Tag app, and it'll remind you if you leave your phone or your valuables behind. So, let's say you're walking away, suddenly you realize, oh, where's my phone? It'll beep on your Cobra Tag, so it's a two-way finder. You can tap the button on the Cobra tag to ring your smartphone. Where's my smartphone? Oh, it's in the couch somewhere. And it'll ring and let you know where your smartphone is. And if you're looking for your Cobra tag item, let's say you lost your keys, you just go to the app and have it ring the Cobra tag on your keys. It's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. Oh, check it out. Go to Cobra.com. Just go to Cobra.com and click on their new products. You get to see the brand new Cobra tag as well. Great Christmas gift, by the way. I'm definitely going to try to get my, my mom has a tendency to lose her keys in her purse. Where's that smartphone of mine? This might be a perfect gift for the holidays as well. The Cobra tag from our good friends over at Cobra Electronics. We'll tell you more about it next week.
What will those guys think of next?
I don't know, but love them. So thanks for their support. And hey, check out our new website, by the way. Have you been over there lately?
Man. We have a new website? Oh, yes. I'm looking at it right now. It is Grizzly Bear. First of all, it's myspace.com/Grizzly Bear Cafe. Now, Clayton, this doesn't look like it's been updated in a little while.
You're on the wrong page, apparently.
Oh, whoops.
Now, you need to head over to geocities.com/...
slash tripod slash personal right. journal.
You need to...
Angel fire.
Angel fire tilde backslash Quackenbush.
Asia, like the Steely Dan album, not like the continent.
You need to go to grizzlyproductions.tv. That's our new website. It's the place where all of our shows are housed. You got even Chikara Podcast A Go-Go is up there now.
What?
Mommy Beta, Daddy on Board, The Trending Show is out with a brand new show this week. Sports Report, our great sports show. It's all there. And we may have a new announcement about a new show coming very, very soon to Grizzly Productions. So go check it out, grizzlyproductions.tv.
What will those guys think of next?
I don't know.
They're really something. You know, there is a catch-all Twitter account you need to subscribe to. It's at Grizzly Produced. It's really important that you subscribe there because Clayton's Twitter will no longer work as of tomorrow. Okay? There you go. So, moving along to other things. Let's talk for a second. This is, I don't know a lot about their corporate culture. Maybe you do. I experience, whenever I'm going away, if I'm spending a night somewhere, I go to my local Target and I get like those little travel shampoo bottles or, you know, whatever I need, like a travel size toothpaste, that sort of thing.
Yeah, those little mini packs.
Right, exactly.
3 ounces or less.
So, for example, like this past weekend, you know, I was up in Massachusetts and New York. This upcoming weekend, I'm wrestling in North Dakota. So whenever I have travel like that, I like to stock up on these little travel items. And I happened to be, at the end of last week, I got into the Target like right after they opened. You know, just a couple minutes after the doors had opened, I was there to collect my travel items, my little tiny Scope mouthwash. And part of the corporate culture at Target must be this thing called the morning huddle. Are you familiar
right.
with this?
I've heard about it at Walmart. Okay. And I know that I think we had it at BJ's Wholesale Club when I worked there, where I don't know if you've ever watched that documentary on Walmart where they all get together and they do like a big rally in the morning. Like we're going to break this sales record for this day that we had last year and that sort of thing.
That to me is really, and perhaps you as well, is so indicative of a great idea that comes from an executive that is so far removed in the power structure from the employees that there is no communication between them. That's how an idea. We're going to get all of our miserable hourly employees that really hate being here but don't have the qualifications for a better job, and we're going to have this like team morale boosting slash misery spreading go get 'em rally every morning that just makes everyone resent the corporate entity more. That's what that is. Sam
right,
Walton's estate.
We last year made $57,000 on this day in 2010. So today, team, our goal, are y'all awake and with me? Our goal today, we're setting a goal to reach $75,000. That's how much we want this store to bring in. But, you know, see, the trickle down to those individuals, they don't get, like, stock options, right?
Right. Exactly. There's no connection. There's no communication. This crap that matters to people on the top does not, it's irrelevant to people at the bottom.
So now are you saying you stumbled into a morning team huddle?
I was.
While you were getting your scope?
An unwitting participant in the morning huddle. And I guess it was right out in the middle of the store. It wasn't, right? You must have like a back warehouse section where you keep your inventory or something, right? Like, or a break room. Doesn't it seem more logical? Or I don't know that it should happen there. But no, this was like right out in the middle of the store. And like, I saw them all like hustling by me. They're like, it's time for the morning huddle. It's time for the morning huddle. And I figured, oh, they must be disappearing, you know, to hear, you know, the trickle down corporate crap for the morning. Well, as it worked out, like the aisle that I had to go down to get my travel-sized goods as I was coming back out, I basically like came up into the back of the morning huddle. And I thought, how long can I stand here before someone starts to notice that I'm here? And like, it's awkward or it's funny for a moment. And sometimes I enjoy having a moment like that. And I started to think, like, what am I going to say if, like, you know, the meeting stops for a second and everyone looks at me? Like, I have to have something good to say. But, as I said, I became, and it was just out in the open. So no one here could, you know, save us your angry emails, you know what I mean there, people from Target or whatever. So the head guy basically said, listen, yesterday our store did $74,519. That's the exact figure that he gave out loud in a public space. He said, you know, that's a little below where we were projected to be. Let's see if we can't get up from that today. We need a little bit more. You know, remember that you're supposed to be doing this and we've got to change these end caps and blah, blah, blah. And like, let's go team or whatever. And like, they all dispersed, you know, so I started helping with the end caps. Like, I just couldn't believe this was happening, like, right out in the open. And
you put the Rachel Ray stemware display out, and you switch that out with the new box sets, the new Arrested Development box sets. You're like, this is
Giada De Laurentiis' spaghetti spoons needed to be moved.
Giada and her big smile. She needs to be out front.
I thought it was Giada.
Giada.
Is she the daughter of, like, the famous movie producers of the same last name?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, my wife's a fan of her.
She's like a more than just like a person who makes cookware.
Right. Like she's a talented chef. I think she trained like professionally, like the Cordon Bleu in France. Like she knows what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. But
that's
she's
a chicken dish, Clayton, not a school.
Chicken Cordon Bleu. She trained there. And she's one of those that's on that show, though, where she's got her own show on the Food Network. And she can't just say any Italian word like how you or I would say it. Right. Like how would you... Like the cheese.
Nicaragua.
Right, like her mozzarella. She can't just say, hey, grab some mozzarella. She goes, and then you want to grab some mozzarella. Every word like that, every Italian word always has to be.
I can't stand that.
Yeah, anyway, so anyway, did they notice? Did they boot you out?
No, but it must happen commonly because, as I said, it was right out like in a big open space in one of the aisles in the middle of the store. So, you know, like if that information was meant to be kept private, you might not want to do that on the floor of the store. And I just thought, one, I don't know if that's like standard operating practice there for Target. Like, do they always do their meeting like right out in the open like that? That's a little weird to me. Maybe they weren't
open yet. They forgot to relock it.
Mm.
And you walked in there. And you saw something private, like it wasn't supposed to open for another half hour.
No. I mean, there were other customers around, not many, because it was like 5 minutes after they'd opened. But I just smacked my microphone there if you're wondering what that was. I had a wild gesture that went with it.
Which, to the benefit of our listeners, they got to see that wild gesture.
Mm-hmm. So I was just really taken aback by how bizarre that was, and... as you alluded to, of course, we are former fast food workers. Like, we understand what that's like when there's so many levels of middle and upper management that the people at the top that probably have great ideas and, you know, in theory, like, it has no relevance to your burger flippers and the people working your drive-through window.
You're right about that, because even in that piece I was reading in the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Good God, Morris.
You know what it is, to be honest with you? I'm so sick of all the different news apps that I have. I've really tried to pare down and pick like a few, and so we subscribe. We finally bit the bullet and subscribed to like one great newspaper that we can have on our iPads and get and so forth. So, because a lot of the articles are like blocked because it's you have to pay to get the journal because it's that good. Mm. Anyway, Representative John Fleming, he had said, and this is what I think you're exactly hitting on. He said, you know, he owns the Subways. You know, one Subway franchise produced more than $5 million in income last year. And he said in an interview that he spends very little time on day-to-day management of any of these Subway stores, mm-hmm. though once in a while he weighs in on broad strategy decisions. He says, quote, I monitor the reports. I'm certainly in communication with some of the managers. But he's not in there ever, you know what I mean? So it reminds me of that. I mean, it's like the trickle-down, right? He's probably sitting back, sitting there at his home on a weekend one day smoking a pipe saying, you know what they need? They need to get those profits up at that one Subway down there in Fairbanks. Let's have them do a team huddle in the morning. See how many Southwestern Chipotle chicken sandwiches they can sell this morning. And then that's how it works.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything more profound to say about it. It was just weird. Like, I don't have a cute summary that goes with it, but...
Do you have an epilogue?
No, I've no epilogue. That's it. End of story. But
if
you'd like to chime in, if perhaps you are in such a work environment and have a ludicrous story, or perhaps can shed insight onto why customers are allowed to be part of the morning huddle at Target, we would like to hear from you, would we not? Our Gmail account, and I'm going to go over to our Gmail account right now, just in case we've recently gotten some Gmail.
Yeah, you go over there.
I don't know that we have. And as I'm doing that, my friend Clayton Morris wants to tell you about a fantastic show sponsor of ours.
We will in a minute. Hey, we watched the season ending of The Walking Dead.
Now.
Have you seen The Walking Dead?
Do it.
We just wrapped up The Walking Dead, the first season of The Walking Dead. Have you watched this show at all?
No sponsor. I'm sorry, what?
We just did a show sponsor. We need a little more breathing room here.
It doesn't feel that way to me. I have not The Walking Dead. I thought that was like a one season and done.
Well, no, they did the first season. So, well, yes, it was one season and done. Now mm-hmm. they're prepping for the second season.
I see.
Which I don't know when that starts, but I can't wait.
Mm.
This season was gripping. Gripping. Very well done. And you know, sort of follows this group of ragtag folks who managed to make it out of this zombie apocalypse. And it follows this one guy. If you've never watched the season, it kicks off this way, so I'm not giving anything away. I guess it's based on the graphic novels, right? The Walking Dead?
I don't know that. I don't know.
He wakes up. He's a police officer. He was shot in some sort of, you know, he was a police officer. It was some sort of routine traffic stop, or they were going on a pursuit. They stopped this guy. He fires at him. He gets shot. He goes into a coma. While he's in the coma, there's like a zombie apocalypse. Then he wakes up and has no idea where he is, no idea what's going on. But the hospital is like empty, and that's how the show starts.
Hmm.
There are only six episodes. Only six episodes in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And they're an hour long. But wicked scary. Very, very good. Are you down with the zombies?
I'm not big on it. I could take it or leave it, to be honest. I've heard that it's excellent, though. I've heard that series is excellent.
It is good. And you know, wraps up, it wrapped up and where you're sort of, I mean, you're just quite tense the whole time. And so I cannot wait to see how the second season unfolds, because it seems like they're worse off than they were at the during the first season. So. And you really want to see them sort of piece it all together, right? Like, what other cities are affected by this? Where, and they're in Atlanta. Like, where, what's going on across the pond? We know that the French held out to the last moment as well, and they fell. But who's left? Are there any other people left that can handle taking on these guys? Good stuff. Good zombie lore. So, I'm curious how many of our listeners pick up that show.
Does it make you interested to hunt down the books? Or not so much?
I don't know.
You're content to experience it the way you are currently.
Yeah, I know that I'd never... speaking of books that I wanted to hunt down, have you ever read any of Jack Kirby's... I don't know how to describe it. Is it Kumandi?
Oh, Kamandi. The Last Boy on Earth or whatever?
Yeah, The Last Boy on Earth stuff.
No.
You know, I tagged... It just came out. It's coming out in hardback, like this week, actually. And I put it in my wish list on Amazon because I had seen an advertisement for it. And it's supposed to be some of his best work,
mm-hmm.
Some of his most highest rated work. But, you know, it didn't get a lot of play because obviously it didn't fit within the mythology of...
it's not like a traditional superhero book at all.
Right. I mean, it's a great story. I mean, he's He, you know, comes across, I don't know if it takes place like hundreds of years after the apocalypse or something, and he's the last man, but there's all kinds of weird creatures he comes in contact with. But it's a really, really well done book. And I don't know how many issues it was, but there's a hardback collection of the issues that I had marked in Amazon that I'm going to purchase because it sounded fascinating. And I like Jack Kirby. You know, it'd be great to see something that I'm, you know, it's not traditional Kirby stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was, you know, I think a series he was really passionate about. He brought a lot of creativity to Commandy, and he liked to branch out. You know, I think he's probably best known because a lot of his superhero stuff has kind of gone on to be like pop culture legend. But Kirby did all kinds of stuff, and he did crazy sci-fi, and he did fantasy stuff, you know.
Right.
And that's why even to this day, there are magazines that are published that are about nothing but the work of Jack Kirby. That, you know, they're books that pay tribute to him, so on and so forth. And he is rightly called the king.
October 4th it comes out. The Commandy, The Last Boy on Earth, Omnibus, Volume 1. It's a hardcover edition. And it presents issues number 1 through 20. Presents the adventures of Commandy, the last boy on Earth. Commandy, one of the few survivors of a great disaster that's destroyed civilization, must make his way in a world populated by bizarre mutated animals and other strange wonders. Considered one of Jack Kirby's most creative works, Commandy features a band of anthropomorphic supporting characters who accompany him as he searches for answers and adventure across the wastelands of Earth. I will be checking that out on October 4th. So what'd you find there over in the Gmail?
A couple emails came into our Gmail account, grizzlybearcafe@gmail.com. Chris writes to us, I was listening to an archive show where you talked about Borders Chai. You probably already know this, but Borders Corporate says the brand that they used was called Mystic Chai. It's made by a company called Key Essentials. You can get it from Amazon or eBay.
Really?
I did not know that. Now, I've had Mystic Chai before, and what I suspect is, I'm not 100% on this, is that it part of the reason it had the taste that it did is because there's something that they added to it. You know, you can make chai sometimes with a water base, you can make it milk-based, and also part of it, I think, is it's got to be steamed correctly to get the flavor correct. You know, if you just stick it in the microwave, for example, you don't get the same flavor result. So this is very interesting information, Chris. Thank you for taking the time to send this in.
I want you
to know I am launching an investigation immediately.
I'm on Amazon right now because I just went from Commandy to Mystic Chai. Boy, my suggested list is going to look interesting after this. Mystic Chai, Spiced Tea. Yeah, Spiced Tea Mix. Now, for those of our new listeners who may be new to the program, Mike has been on a crusade. Now, I think I introduced you to their chai years ago, right?
Yeah.
You were never really much of a coffee drinker.
No, you know, it was in that brief interim when you were, it was very brief, right after you finished at Pitt, but before you left for the West Coast. That's when you brought me to chai.
And he would go there, I think, every day for a chai, because it's delicious. The Borders chai was second to none.
That's right.
And then they switched their coffee, their cafes at Borders, over to that Seattle's Best. And then of course, they went out of business. So and when they switched over to Seattle's Best, they got rid of that chai. Spiced chai, Mystic chai, vanilla tea. And I guess it would be was it vanilla version or no?
Probably.
Yeah, they have it. $14, 2-pound can. Enjoy the creamy, sweet flavor of our Mystic Vanilla Chai, either served hot to warm you over, or over ice blended to refresh you with spicy coolness. There you go. You have to give it a shot, man.
Investigation results forthcoming. Thank you very much, Chris, for writing to us. Shane writes to us as well. He said he just listened to Daddy on Board, which you may be interested to know is a largely audio podcast that we do. We invite you to check us out there first and foremost. Unless you are deaf, you can watch the video stream of that podcast. He writes, since Mike's never seen classic 80s movies as discussed, perhaps reviewing them as we did the Batman movies could be our new segment on The Grizz. We could give two different perspectives because Clayton has already seen them. He could tell us if they've held up. Well, I, as a new viewer, would offer a different perspective. Shane from the engineering department sent that. Thank you, Shane.
I like that idea. You and I had off camera or off microphone chatted about that because there's quite a few classic 80s movies you've just never seen.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It'd be, you know, maybe we could put that out to the Grizz audience, and maybe they could choose.
We'd like you to do the work for us. Send in your reviews to grizzlybearcafe@gmail.com. Clayton will read one as if it's his opinion, and I will read the other.
So no, that's not what I had in mind. What I had in mind was you send us to maybe 10 suggestions on our Facebook fan page or via Twitter.
That's lame.
And this idea is much more lame than yours. And we'll go through them and we'll collate. I'll have you staple them
correct order.
And we'll cultivate a list of maybe perhaps, I don't know, what do you think? 10 classic 80s movies? What do you think?
Three.
Do you like that?
Yep.
Three.
So we look forward. You can also tweet us some suggestions, right? We do go into our Twitter stream. In fact, it's from the Twitter stream today. I think we may pluck forth a Guilty Pleasure song suggestion. They've been trickling in here. We did get one more email here. This one's very recent, in fact. I think it just came in this morning. From Eric Miller, who attended the live Chikara event up in Brockton, Massachusetts, which was on Saturday night. So thank you for coming out to support us there, Eric. I got to meet a lot of people. I got to meet some great fans. I got to see an old friend of mine who I haven't seen in 15 or 16 years. I had a great time out on the road with the Chikara gang. And in spite of the fact that I have a horribly injured wrist, I escaped largely unscathed, which is great because this upcoming weekend in North Dakota would be a real bummer if my wrist were any worse.
I want to hear about the big New York show in a moment, the big Chikara New York show, which you and I were texting back and forth about last night. And first...
Well, wait, let me finish Eric's email.
Oh, I thought you were done.
He did mention, by the way, he's a loyal egghead, and he's from Rhode Island, which is a very small state, Clayton. Did you know that?
I want to pause now and thank one of our show sponsors.
Right.
So, you're done with the email yet?
Then Eric went on to say,
oh, okay.
Clayton, are you watching that awful Walking Dead show?
Is he in my house right now?
He wrote several nice paragraphs to me here, and I'm very grateful for that. And then he writes, P.S., I love Clayton as well.
Oh, thanks, Eric. Much appreciated. Oh. He's calling from a phone inside my house. How does he know that I watched The Walking Dead last night? Thanks, Eric. Thanks for that. I want to pause, though, and thank one of our show sponsors and our good friends over at Gazelle.com. They are back with us. Do you know why? Do you have any idea?
I would assume it's because they like us.
Well, they like us a whole lot, yes. But do you have any idea what gadget may be released in the next few weeks?
A gadget that may be released. Is it from our friends at Cobra?
No. You wouldn't want to give that away. Come on.
No, I don't have an answer for you.
Apple is set to release the new iPhone 5.
Oh, iPhone 5 starring Kate Winslet. I just saw the trailer for that.
And she is holding Leonardo DiCaprio on the front of the iPhone 5. Mm-hmm. This phone, set to come out in the next few weeks. We don't yet know what's coming from Apple. However, we do know that Gazelle is gearing up because iPhone 4, then, they're going to have a trade-in fest like you've never had before. People who've been waiting, perhaps, to get rid of their other smartphone that they wanted to get rid of.
That's because people hate iPhone 4.
Right.
That's why they're going to have this trade-in fest like nothing else. I've never heard so much negative talk as I've heard about iPhone 4.
That's right. It's still the number one selling smartphone in the world, 15 months after its launch. So
for another week or two.
That's right, till the iPhone 5 comes out. Mm. Then you're going to want to trade that puppy in, and Gazelle.com will take it off of your hands. It's so easy to do. I know you just went through the process with a few gadgets. Tell us about it.
I did, because I hate iPhone 4. Okay?
If you had one.
I could not. Quiet now. I hate.
What was that little flip phone thing you had? Something from the late 80s, right?
I had like one of those big like army walkie-talkie ones.
Like the one
like
that Mulder
Fox
uses.
Mulder. Yeah. Right, yeah, totally. Yeah, you knew where I was going with that. I did, actually. And the people over at Gazelle make this so ridiculously easy, even a simple pro wrestler like myself can do it, right? You're going to go over to their website, which is gazelle.com. You're going to tell them about the brand name of what you've got, what series it's from, or the model, or the name. And they're going to give you an instant quote. And you don't have to take them up on that quote right away. It stays good for up to 30 days. So even though, to be fair, your item is losing value every day that you hold on to it, they'll honor this offer they make you for up to 30 days. They'll help you out with the shipping. They send you a prepaid shipping label. On occasion, they'll even send the box for you to stick it inside of. And man, then you get paid. They'll stick it in your PayPal. They'll write you a paper check, send you a gift card. You can donate your money to charity if you're one of those.
Yeah.
Or if your good is worthless, they'll recycle it for you in an eco-friendly way. They make it so very, very simple.
Yeah,
and you can send bunches of them together. You know, it's not like, oh, I have six different items, but I'm going to have to go through this process six different times. No, you know, you could spend all those 30 days entering in more and more and more items and then send them all one bulk shipment and get one bulk payment. It's really quite simple, and really those goods, they're just taking up room in your sock drawer, and as I said, they're losing value every day you hang on to them. So make some money while you can, right? You hate iPhone 4, I hate iPhone 4, we all want iPhone 5s or Super Robot 3. Go to gazelle.com, make yourself some money, or, you know, whatever, give it to charity. That's cool, too.
Yeah, they're doing some great stuff over there. This is like their Super Bowl time of the year right now, anytime a new iPhone comes out. And we still don't know what's going to happen with the iPod line, right? This time of year, we usually see brand new iPod Touches coming out from Apple. And usually we might see some leaked information online as to what the, you know, what it's going to look like. Case manufacturers try to get clamor and get some spec information so they can be the first to market with new cases. We don't have any idea what these things are going to be. So what will the new iPod line
look
like as well?
Why are they like that? Why is Apple like that? Is it because people hated the iPhone 4 so much? That they're afraid of, like, consumer backlash?
No. Listen, idiot. Here's what happens. If you've got a product, let's say your car is coming out. Let's say you've got a product, right? Let's say you just released 4 months ago, you came out with
a new smartphone.
Let's say your car came out with its own smartphone, right?
Okay. I'm with you.
And, you know, you're trying to sell them for 5 months, right? And you know, because you know at month six, you're going to roll out a new phone. Mm. Well, you're not going to want to let people know that you've got a new phone coming, right? Mm-hmm. Up until the point at which you've almost sold out of them completely, of your first line of them, right? Mm-hmm. Before you're ready to roll out. You don't want to have like a huge warehouse full of the first Chikara smartphone.
Right, no.
You want to sell out of them. So then the announcement comes almost just as soon as the new phone comes out. That's how it works.
I see.
So, but we don't know any information. Apple's been tight-lipped about the new iPod line. They usually are. They don't make any sort of pre-announcements about any products until they're ready to go. And it's smart because they don't want to be left with a whole bunch of people saying, wait a minute, why would I buy an iPhone 4 right now? I heard the new one's coming out in a few months, right? Just wait a few months. So that's how they roll.
I see.
That's what they do.
They like angry customers. So, and mission accomplished, because the negative word of mouth about iPhone 4 in the Twitter sphere has reached a fever pitch this week, Jobs. So, at this point in the show, I'm going to start looking through our Twitter stream here. I want to throw some of these out to you here, Clayton. Some suggestions for guilty pleasure songs that have been rolling in, both through the Grizzly Bear Cafe Twitter account and also my personal one. Over on the Grizz account, Andy sent in one, and I have to admit, I think this is a strong contender. Into the Groove by Madonna.
That's a good one.
Now, I have a Madonna guilty pleasure song. I like Who's That Girl? But loosely related to that, there is the underplayed, even guiltier Madonna song, Causing a Commotion. Do you know Causing a Commotion?
I don't. Well, I'm sure if I heard it, I would. That's a good one. Yeah, I've got the moves, baby.
You've got the motion.
Oh, yeah.
We'd be getting together. We'll be causing a commotion. Over on my Twitter account, Luke sent in Perfect Way by Scritti Politti, which is a fine choice. But I'll admit, I wouldn't put the windows up for Scritti Politti. That's a windows down.
Yeah.
Mad Crouton 74 offered up two of the worst songs of the 80s, Respect Yourself by Bruce Willis or Heartbeat by Don Johnson.
Those aren't guilty pleasures. You would never listen to those songs.
Right, yet no one likes them.
Right.
That's part of it there. Robo Duke sent in, and I think this is certainly one worthy of contention here, Two of Hearts by Stacey Q.
That's a good one.
I thought you might be down with that. Joe wrote to us, and I don't know, this one's from a kind of on the different spectrum, Sail On by the Commodores, which I don't object to. I don't object to that. I do have a favorite Commodores song, and it's the post-Lionel Richie hit, too, The Night Shift.
That's a good song.
By the Commodores, I like that one. I think that was like their only chart success once Lionel went solo. So they've been trickling in here, and perhaps if we don't get any more suggestions, we will pluck from that pool a guilty pleasure song, which we will serve up to you at the end of today's program.
So I want to chat a little comic books here in a moment, but first I want to hear about the big New York show, the big Chikara New York show that you had last night. Where was it? The Highline Ballroom?
You are correct, sir. We were at the Highline Ballroom, and as I was saying to you, we refer to these things as supernova vacancy, and you can't put any more people in there. It was our first time in a new place since we departed the Warsaw in Brooklyn in favor of this place, which is right in Manhattan, in the Meatpacking District, if you were curious.
Nice area.
And it seemed like a really good fit for us. And everybody, you know, we just, there was a really good vibe by both, you know, on both sides of the curtain. And everybody seemed to really enjoy themselves.
A lot of new fans there? I mean, people who probably hadn't had a chance to see you guys before? Or
I think a mix. I think a mix. The night before when we were in Brockton, Massachusetts, it very much felt like a crowd that they knew everything that was going on. You know, you just knew. They knew all the characters. They knew all the moves. They knew everything. It was more of a mix in New York. I think it was kind of a combination of existing fans and maybe new fans or people who'd been dragged against their will, things like that. So, yeah, it was a really interesting mix, but we had a great time, and the whole weekend was a lot of fun. And we're on the road again. It's only 3 weeks until we hit North Carolina and Tennessee. So if you're down that way, I look forward to seeing you. We're in Burlington, North Carolina on Friday, October 7th. Saturday, October 8th, we're in Kingsport, Tennessee for the very first time, our Tennessee debut. So if you want us to come down that way more often, you better come to these, or we just stop coming. You see how we do that?
So selfish of you.
It is, it is. Hey, I also want to tell you this, and this is of particular note for our fans over in Europe who are allowed to listen to this podcast. Chikara's first live streaming iPay-per-view event, which is being offered through GoFight Live, that's GFL.TV, you can already order the pay-per-view. You can order it right now. And because it's a 4 p.m. start here, it won't be all that late in Europe. It's not like, you know, when an 8 p.m. pay-per-view starts here in the U.S., it's God knows what hour in Europe. I can't convert that into metrics. So, if you're interested to check it out, High Noon, the Chikara season finale, is on iPay-per-view November 13th. Starting at 4 p.m., you can order it right now. Go to gfl.tv for more information.
Good stuff. Hey, I had a chance to read some of the new 52. Have you read any of them yet from DC Comics?
No, but I have seen a couple reviews where people are saying to me it's not quite living up to the hype. Like, there's a couple books that are doing okay, but the vast majority of the relaunched books are underwhelming. Tell me what your synopsis of this is.
And, of course, you can see some of the reviews. If you read the digital editions of the books, which, of course, are being released simultaneously within the app. So if you either download the DC Comics app for your iPad or your tablet device and then download, or the Comixology app, which is the company that makes them, that's the app I use. They have the user-generated reviews right in there, so you can read other people's reviews of the books. The ones that I've downloaded seem to be the highest rated of the books, which says something, which is good, right? Mm. But Justice League, I like the first Justice League. It was too short, but it was a good entree into it. We get to see Batman, we get to see Green Lantern, and then Superman revealed in it. So it seemed a little pedestrian, but I'm excited to see where it's going. That's the Geoff Johns book, and it's already the number one selling comic book of 2011. Mm-hmm. The new Justice League. And for me, like a guy who hasn't read Justice League in years, it's a good starting place to start at issue one and not have to read 80 crossover books with storylines that are intertwined. Some they decide to go back and say never happened in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good starting point. I enjoyed it. And the art is beautiful. I also read, and I enjoyed it even more than the Justice League, is the new Detective Comics. Mm. And I cannot wait for that next issue. He's hunting down the Joker, who seems to be, you know, I mean, and they sort of reintroduce you to the Joker. And he's hunting down this guy who, and at one point, I guess the Joker, he's getting surgery to basically get his Joker face removed. Mm. It's gripping. It's good. Again, the art is beautiful. It's really well done. So I'm totally on board with what they did with the Detective Comics number one. Hmm. How do you start over with a book like that? And I think they assume that most people know the origin story of Batman. Mm-hmm. That they don't bore you with those sorts of details. Mm-hmm. They don't go through the whole Thomas Wayne murder and try to recast that whole thing again. We've seen that thing printed countless times, and so it's not about that. It's about relearning his skills as Batman. You're getting to understand how good of a detective he is. And it opens like with gangbusters right out of the gate. You know, he's being fired upon by an entire SWAT team as he's trying to hunt down the Joker in this moment. And of course, the SWAT team doesn't, you know, believe he's entirely the good guy, and he's you know, yelling back at them, these fools, you know. And the relationship with Commissioner Gordon is already established to a degree, so they're not retreading things. Mm-hmm. I think the essential things that you know about these characters, they're here, but where they go from there. You get the building blocks. Now it's being taken in a completely new direction. And I enjoyed Justice League and I enjoyed Detective Comics number one. And this morning, I purchased Batgirl. Mm. Read some great reviews of that. That one's also getting some good reviews.
Who is the artist on Batgirl?
Gail Simon or Simone?
Simone. Right. And she's kind of like a fan favorite, I think, if I'm not mistaken, from her days doing Catwoman.
Yeah. Mm. Beautiful, beautiful work, and the front cover is beautiful. So I actually just started reading that one this morning. I'm about 6-7 pages into it, mm-hmm. and really, really like that. So yeah. I have to say the way it stacks up for me right now, and I think another book that's getting some good reviews also is the Green Lantern relaunch. Mm. Is there a Flash relaunch? I haven't seen a Flash relaunch.
I'm not sure. I think it was going to take them at least 4 weeks to roll out all the new books. So.
And a quiet hit, actually, was reading some great reviews about Batwoman.
Mm. I didn't realize that was making the jump.
Yeah, the Batwoman book is getting some great reviews.
I think that character when they introduced that character, you know, it got some major play, of course, because she's a lesbian. You know, like the mainstream media had some fun with that for a little while, but the character overall just seemed like it had enormous potential that they were doing very, very little with. And for a while they did this offshoot, you know, this is before everything got rebooted, they did an offshoot Justice League book that was sort of centered around Hal Jordan and Green Arrow, and she was supposed to be a player in that. And I thought that would be a really interesting mix. Also, like Supergirl, Captain Marvel Jr. Like, it was a really odd grouping of superheroes. And then, I don't know if there was, like, some editorial decision or whatever, and then she wasn't in it at all. She was in it for, like, one panel. So I'd be really interested to see what they're going to do with that character, who's obviously had great potential all along. And I'm also thrilled that they put Barbara Gordon back in the Batgirl suit, because that weird mute ninja Batgirl or whatever they were doing for a while there, I don't need any of that.
No, this is good, and she's... You know, she admits she was on a bit of a hiatus. She's like, you know, and it bursts. What I love about all of these books is they just burst right into the action. You know, mm-hmm. they get right to the heart of the matter and give you they really want you flipping the pages fast. You can really tell that. And they don't waste much time with her. Mm-hmm. She gives a little bit of a backstory about how she's Batgirl again and how she, you know, without her father knowing it, she's been poring through police files while you know, that he would bring home with him, and she would pore through them, and she's picking out nuggets and details that he would never notice, and so that's why she's on the hunt for this, like, group of serial killers, and she finds them. That's how the book unfolds, and she bursts in a rage. It's really, 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 really well done. I can't wait to pick that book up again.
Hmm.
So what?
But
have you
no
heard?
Flash one yet, huh? Still coming.
Well, my battery just died on my iPad because I was reading all morning. I was reading the Wall Street Journal this morning. So I was going to jump in and see if there was a Flash. You know, the logo, though, if I don't know if you've been in the Comixology app, the logo says the new 52. Check it out here. And it's a picture of the Flash.
Hmm.
So let me just do a little searchy search here, because I would like to see if there's going to be a new Flash book. For me, that's one that needs a reboot, right?
Right. And I would think there's got to be, right? They did all these redesigns of the costumes. All the classic characters got updated looks. I think for some of the characters, I think it's an improvement. I saw the redesign of the Flash and of Aquaman. They seem like good updates. I'm not sold on the new Superman costume, but anytime you muck with that iconic costume, there's going to be a little bit of a... But, yeah, I don't see how they could do it without a Flash reboot.
Let's see here. October. Yes. Yes, there's a new Flash. It launched, mm-hmm. It launches on September 28th, and they've staggered them out through the month. So you've got another 9 days or so, another 8 days till this is released. So mm-hmm. we'll have to check that out, too. I'm curious who's drawing this. Francis Manapul. This who's drawing it.
That name is not familiar to me.
Yeah, and he's also writing it. With Brian, is it Buccoletto? Buccoletto? Those two are involved in the process. So, Yeah, I'll read you a little description here. The Fastest Man Alive returns to his own monthly series from the writer-artist team of Francis Manapole and Brian Bucatello. The Flash knows he can't be everywhere at once, but what happens when he faces an all-new villain who really can be? As if that's not bad enough, the villain is a close friend. It's the kickoff to Flash number one. So I'm excited about it because then I can look forward to these books once a month. And I feel like I'm starting fresh again. I'm not going back and reading something that's 7 years old, just like a four-issue series about something that I still don't know. I even feel like those series that I go back and reread are somewhat out of context because you need a bit of a backstory. And with these, I don't think you do. So I'm enjoying them. But which ones have you heard aren't good or are getting mixed reviews?
From especially this weekend when I got to see a lot of other comic book aficionados. My travels, they were basically saying like, oh, you know, the vast majority of the 52 books are real crap. You know, it was just sort of a generalization that people did not seem to like it. So I don't have anything more specific at the moment to offer you on that, but there are definitely some I'd like to give a try to, and I'm always interested, even though it almost ultimately leads to disappointment. I always like picking up Aquaman when they relaunch him, because at least when Peter David did him for a period of 3 or 4 years, it was outstanding stuff. And I think it's just a matter of getting the right guy to make that character come to life, because he can be quite dull.
Yeah.
If he's not done correctly, he can be quite dull. In the same way, like Hawkman, who, you know, has really confusing continuity, it'd be interesting to pick him up now, because perhaps they've clipped all that baggage from him. You know, this might be a fresh start for him. So I'm interested to give this a try. I'll continue to say that without actually picking any of them up.
Right.
So I thought before... Oh, and incidentally, I don't know if this might be up your alley. It's kind of like a noir detective-y kind of book out there from independent publisher 215 Inc. That's I-N-K, of course. They're a Philly-based brand, 215inc.com. Check them out. Their Vic Boone series is actually a really interesting read, and they have some other cool stuff over there. They actually have a really funny zombie book that might be right up your alley that you should check out, but... show some local guys some love. 215 Inc., the comic imprint. They're doing some good stuff over there. Check out. Support an indie book. You could do worse. We want to thank someone who supports us, this independent podcast, as we are here at the Grizzly Bear Cafe. Our friends over at handyholder.com.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hey, I'm reading comic books with my iPad. You need a handy holder, right? You want to sit back. Mm-hmm. You don't want it to fall on the floor. You just slap a handy holder on the back of it. It's the universal tablet holder, so it'll prevent it from falling on the floor. They've got some great new packaging out now. Go over to handyholder.com to learn more about it. It'll protect your tablet device. You got a Kindle? Mike, you have an iPad. You love the handy holder.
Indeed, I do.
You don't use the leg strap, though. I use the leg strap sometimes on the couch with my son because he'll, you know, want to play videos on the iPad and pick different things, and he slaps his hand on it. You don't want it to crash down on the floor. You want it to remain stable. So you can just tie it around your leg, snap, you know, just like Velcro, just goes right around your leg, snaps right on the back of the iPad. It works flawlessly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have to admit, like, the thing I always had doubts in my mind about before I got the handy holder was, can it really be all that secure? You know, we're talking about a neoprene strap here that either goes over your hand or around your leg to hold it in place, and I've never had any issue whatsoever with the security of it. And that's even after, you know, there's a dual lock ring that holds the strap onto the back of your tablet device. You know, I like to keep it on my Super Robot 2. Even after having removed it and reapplied it more than once, I've never had any issue whatsoever with the security of it. It's absolutely a wonderful device. Right now, too, by the way, that neoprene strap for either your hand or your leg, if you order over at handyholder.com, that comes free with a portable mini stand. You can go over there and check out, too, a lot of the other stuff they have going on, the tripod, the spring clamp. I am certain there is a tablet accessory for you, tablet device user in our listening audience. They've also now, if you want to click on the store on handyholder.com, they've got demo videos for each of these. So you can check each one of them out, see them in action, and see if it might be for you. Maybe not just for personal use, but professional as well. You get a sense of all the vast and varied applications for this wonderful invention, and it's made right here in the good old U.S. of A., by our friends over at handyholder.com. That's hand, the letter E, holder.com. We love them, and we wouldn't talk about them if we didn't hear on the program. I use that device every single day.
Yeah, absolutely love it. So we thank them a whole bunch for their support of the show. Perfect gift as we head into the holiday season now. Get it for your, if you're thinking about picking up an iPad for one of your loved ones or another tablet device, there's great deals on Kindles right now. I think $139, and there's a new Amazon tablet set to come out probably in the next few weeks, we're hearing. It could be a new Amazon Kindle tablet that we're hearing rumblings about, and some people have already tested and played with it. So, you know, you may want to grab a handy holder to go along with that, a perfect gift accessory for your loved one for the holidays. Hey, it's that time of the show where all year we've been running down some guilty pleasure songs, and those are the choices. Those are the song selections that we've been doing. These are songs that, you know, you're wondering, you may want to roll up the windows in your car when you're heading down the street. Songs that if other people heard you listening to while you're at a stoplight, you'd be embarrassed by, perhaps. We've run down a whole slew of them. Now we've turned the keys to the kingdom over to our audience. And I have to say, the one that you said you found from one of our listeners today, the choice of Stacy Q for Two of Hearts from 1985, sounds like a good one. What do you think?
All right. Winner, winner, chicken dinner to you, Robo Duke. Here it is, that infectious dance hit from the mid-80s. Windows up, kids. Here it is, Two of Hearts by Stacy Q.